Hello, I'm Matt Baume, and welcome to the Sewers of Paris. We're on a podcast search for the entertainment that changed the lives of queer people. On tonight's episode, ballet. Last week I spoke with Brett Shuford, one half of the couple known as the Broadway Husbands. This week I'm talking to his husband, Stephen Hanna, about leaving home to pursue a ballet career and discovering just how physically grueling that work could be. Not to mention, surprisingly hostile to sensitive young guys like him. The work took a heavy toll on him, and for a time Stephen found himself going down a dark path, until he found a way to change course and find the life that he'd been looking for. I'll have that conversation in a minute. First, a quick reminder that I've got a weekly-ish newsletter that you can subscribe to at mattbaume.com. I'll be sharing details there about my upcoming book about the history of gay characters on sitcoms. And I've got a YouTube channel where I post videos about film and TV history. I've got a video coming this Sunday about Seinfeld's Not That There's Anything Wrong With That episode. That's at youtube.com/mattbaume. Also, big thanks to everybody who supports the Sewers of Paris on Patreon. Patrons get hours of exclusive videos about super queer pop culture history, stickers and stuff in the mail, and shoutouts in the credits of YouTube videos. Now, here's Stephen. Well, this week I'm speaking with Stephen. He's the dancing half of the Broadway Husbands and father of Maverick. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So what is the entertainment that changed your life?
The entertainment that changed my life is probably the VHS tape of The Nutcracker starring Mikhail Baryshnikov and Gelsey Kirkland.
Okay. How old were you when you discovered that?
It was given to me as a Christmas gift. I want to say I was probably seven. And it was actually given to me. My dad was a dancer when he was young, and the woman that gave it to me was actually his dance teacher as a kid. So it was a Christmas gift. And, you know, whenever I would get VHS tapes of movies or whatever for Christmas, I would just, you know, wear them out instantly. And, it was definitely something that changed my life. From the moment that I saw that video, I was like, all right, well, that's kind of what I want to do. How do I become that?
So how did this person know, how did this woman know that this 7-year-old kid would be so into a dance video?
Well, I mean, at the time I did dance, you know, I took, you know, just a little tap, a little jazz. And it was the one thing I really liked and loved to do. I was dancing. But this video kind of just made me want to do it more and do ballet also. And yeah, that was kind of how that happened. But yeah, it's definitely an entertainment that I would say changed / guided like so many decisions that I've probably made in my life.
When you think back, like looking back on that tape, do you remember like what you were seeing and like what caught your eye when you first watched it?
I mean, I think everything. I think Baryshnikov's like pure, what's the word? Athleticism, and just the excitement of it, the lighting, the costumes, the storytelling, just the fact that it felt like they were playing parts, but like dancing at such a high level. I don't know. It was so exciting to me. It was like dance like I'd never seen it before. It was like, you know, the best dancing I'd ever seen. And I just wanted to do that.
Yeah, you mentioned that you were doing that you'd been dancing for a while. How long had that been a part of your life?
Probably for like 3 years or so at that point.
What did that look like? You know, it sounds like you started like 4-ish. So what kind of dance were you doing?
Yeah, I was turning 4. You know, I was doing tap and jazz, you know, nothing crazy. But I would do it once a week. And it was the one thing that my mom didn't have to force me to do that I was super excited to do. And, you know, it was once a week. And maybe it turned into twice a week. And then around when I was 7, I went to a different school that had way more to offer as far as dance and musical theater and ballet. It had more of a variety of things at more of like a higher level. And so that's kind of how it started. And I'd say that this video definitely jump-started me wanting to be a ballet dancer for sure.
Was there like, when you think about like what it changed, like did you start going in a different direction with the dancing that you were doing? Like, did it change the kind of shows that you wanted to do?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when, you know, at 7 years old, it's so funny to think about, I started ballet, and then I started with a Russian ballet teacher, and she, you know, I saw the video, right? And then I started taking her class, and one of the first classes I took from her, she like took me to the side and like gave me like kind of like a punch on the face, not a punch, but like pushed me on my face with her fist, like in an endearing way, not in a violent way. And said, "You're my baby Baryshnikov." And so I was just, you know, it was like synchronicity. And it didn't completely change the direction that I was going in right away. You know, I was doing a lot of musical theater. I did some plays. But it took a couple years. And then once I really started to learn ballet, I just went in that direction more.
What was the opinion of other kids your age? I imagine it was kind of unusual for a young kid, a young boy, to be doing this kind of dancing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they didn't get it. I didn't really tell a lot of people. The people that did know made fun of me, and I was bullied and not tortured, but I definitely didn't feel comfortable around a lot of the kids in my school. And so I just lied about it, really, for a long time. And yeah, they weren't really into it. Let's just say that.
Where was this?
In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay. So, you know, kind of a city, but maybe not. I mean, it's not like New York or Los Angeles where everyone's a performer. So right. I imagine this was something that was kind of foreign.
Yes. Yes, it was definitely foreign. And then in sixth grade, when we, you know, in middle school, we all went to a bigger middle school, and there were a lot of kids that I didn't go to school with. So I was really excited to go to school with new kids where they didn't know that I danced. And then I was actually able to really lie about it.
Wow. So it was like something you just hid from people.
I mean, I tried. I didn't do a very good job of it. Mm-hmm. I ended up leaving home in the seventh grade to go to the School of American Ballet. So I didn't have to hide it anymore there.
What was that? Must have been really a big change for you.
Yeah, it was a huge change. I mean, it was completely life-altering, kind of like that VHS tape. You know, it was exciting. You know, it was what I wanted, and I had a dream, and my parents were able to help me take steps towards it. And at the same time, it was also really hard to be 13 years old and away from home. So, you know, there was a lot of good. And then there was also a lot of, you know, homesickness in the first 2 years, especially. But, you know, it changed my life completely. You know, it took me on a path to join the New York City Ballet. And because of that, I've been able to have a great career and survive, I would say. Not survive, but thrive. Yeah, so it, you know, it was very different than living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that's for sure. I went to a public school, and then I went to New York City, and I was in a private school. You know, I think there were probably at least 30 kids in every class that I was in sixth grade, and then I'm in seventh grade, I was in class with like 10 to 12 kids, and that was it.
What was your daily routine like at the ballet academy?
Mostly my schedule was I would go to school in the mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. And then I would take class from like 10:30 to 12, and then 12:30 to 2, and then sometimes 2 to 4. And then on the days that I was done at 2, I would often run back to school to try and catch up with work and ask teachers questions about work that I didn't understand. And then, you know, whenever we were getting ready for performances, we would rehearse at night from 7 to 9 p.m. And so it was pretty rigorous. And yeah, but I loved it.
Was there much of was it a gay environment? I guess is what I'm trying to ask. Like, or how supportive was it of a little gay kid?
Well, you know, at the time, I don't know that I necessarily knew I was gay. And even if I was, I don't know. I would love to say that it was the most supportive environment for a gay kid, but I honestly don't think that it was. I mean, ballet in general is can be a very chauvinistic place. There's a lot of machismo things happening. So a lot of the guys, at least that I was in school with, were trying to prove something, and either they were straight and they were super macho, or they were gay and trying to prove something else, So ultimately, if it was a supportive environment, I didn't feel that it was. I didn't feel comfortable to come out for a long time. I don't know that it's this way today, but in the early 90s, it was definitely a different story.
I think that might be surprising to folks who would think, well, it's the arts, it's performing. It seems like it's an environment. There's a lot of gay ballet performers.
Of course. Yeah. I think at the time, listen, there are bullies everywhere, right? There are mean girls. There are people who are trying, I think part of the issue with me was that I didn't want people to know that I was gay, because I didn't want to just be labeled as gay. Cause I was, at the time, I felt like if I told people I was gay, then that's all that people would see me as gay. And, I didn't want that. So I just hid it for as long as I could. And at the same time, people were always trying to like get me to say that I was gay, or, kind of hinting at things. And, I didn't give it up for a long time. So.
And where was the school?
In New York City, in Lincoln Center.
Wow. So, I mean, I imagine there would have been a lot of gay culture around if you wanted to avail yourself, but then again, you were also pretty young, right?
Right. I was in the school from the time I was 12 to 17. And then there was a lot of gay culture. I just think personally, for whatever reason, I was not comfortable,
So what was waiting for you when you graduated?
My junior year of high school, I joined the New York City Ballet. So I started dancing professionally then.
Were you still going to school, or was that
I went to school my senior year. I think I just went in the mornings. I didn't take a lot of courses my senior year because I didn't have a lot of credits to get. So I think I just went in the morning, and with the company, you start your day at 10:30 and you rehearse from 11:30 to 6 with an hour off, and then you perform every night. So very busy.
Yeah, I imagine that was really physically demanding too.
Yeah. Luckily I was 17 when I got in, right? Sure.
What was it? Did you feel like a star? A lot of people must dream of landing a gig like that.
Yeah. I guess it depends on the day and the minute of the day. The schedule of a ballet dancer is really grueling and exhausting. And every day it's like starting up, climbing up a mountain every day. At night when you're performing, you have those amazing moments and those amazing feelings, right? And it makes it all worth it. But throughout the day, there's, you're sweating 90% of the time, you're out of breath, all of the time. It's very physically demanding. You're also learning a lot quickly, and you're having to perform on the spot. And, so it's just a lot of pressure. Most of the day, I don't know that you'd feel like a star. But then there are always those moments at night that made it all worth it, for sure.
Are there particular shows that you're really proud of?
Yeah, I'm proud of a lot of the work I did there. There's like a lot of time periods that I'm proud of. There are certain ballets that I always love to do. Mostly when you go out onto that stage, you're super prepared, even as unprepared as I felt sometimes, because of all of the training that you do every day, you're just ready, you're ready for anything. So looking back on it, it's the majority of it I'm very proud of, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, was there ever a temptation to feel some imposter syndrome, like, you know, feeling like you didn't belong or that you weren't as prepared as you needed to be?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, when you first join, it took me a long time to stand in the front every morning in a ballet company. You take a ballet class with all of the dancers in the company. And in the New York City Ballet, there's about 100. And so you're all in the studio with, you know, some of your idols and people that you've looked up to for years. And all of a sudden you're taking class with them every day. So it took me a long time in the beginning just to feel like I could, like, I remember, you know, there's bar work and center work in ballet. And so when we get to center, sometimes I just wouldn't dance because I was too you know, self-conscious or nervous, or I don't know what I was going through, but it took me a long time to really feel comfortable. And then, you know, as you move through the company and you start doing different parts, of course, every time you get a bigger and bigger role, you doubt yourself, and you, cause again, you're dancing with dancers that you look up to. And so you're always like, oh God, can I really do this? I remember I used to dance with this girl who was absolutely amazing. And whenever I would get really nervous when I was dancing with her, if we were doing something new, I would, like, there was one ballet in particular where we would start opposite sides of the stage and I would be like psyching myself out, and I would see her and I'd be like, well, at least I know that she's going to be amazing, even if I don't do as well. Like that, like sometimes I would actually say that to myself, and eventually I, you know, I conquered those kinds of voices. But, you know, yeah, I mean, imposter syndrome all the time, because some days you feel more confident about your dancing than others. You know, it's not something that every day you're like, oh, I feel so good about this. You know, it's hard. It's also live performance. You just never know what's going to happen.
How long were you with the ballet?
I danced there for 13 years.
Wow. Did you see a lot of change in that time?
Change. Yeah. I mean, yes, because most of the dancers that I got into the company with, or when I got into the company, there was a lot of older, much older dancers that were still there. And then by the time I was finished there, most of them were now gone, and there was a whole new crop of people coming up. But I would say that there's more change that happened to that place once I left it than when actually I was there.
What kind of change?
Just leadership. You know, the director of the company resigned, and now they have a new director. And a lot of the people who taught me, a lot of the roles that I danced have all now passed away. So it's not really the same institution that it was when I was a part of it, for sure.
When you look at, like, who you were when you joined, I think you said you're 17 when you joined.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, so you were around 30 when you left. Like, that's how much had you changed in that time?
Oh my God. Immensely. I, you know, just based on just my physicality, when I was 17, I was 5'11". And I still hadn't really gone through, like, my pimply phase teenage years. Like, I was a late bloomer. I got, like, pimples at, like, 19 on my face. And, you know, so just physically, I'm 6'2", you know. So that was totally different. You know, at 17, a junior in high school, you really know nothing. And I was completely entitled. You know, it took me a long time to realize how great of a job it was that I had and how privileged it was for me to be there. And, you know, I had to go through a lot to figure that out. And, you know, just confidence. I don't know that I had much confidence. I definitely faked it a lot in the beginning, and I definitely became more confident. And, you know, 17 to 30 is just, it's kind of a lifetime, right? I mean, even 17 to 22 is like a huge shift. So
what do you think it was in there that helped you become more confident?
I got sober. When I was 26, I got sober from drugs and alcohol, and it completely changed my life.
What prompted that?
overuse of drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, my life was completely unmanageable. And if I didn't stop, I you know, would either be on the streets or dead. So, you know, I woke up just in time. I didn't lose everything. And I was able to get sober and go back to work and prove that I was a worthy human being and I was an employable human being and I wasn't, you know, I was worth it.
That must have been a huge challenge to be making this big change in your life while also doing some really physically and emotionally demanding work.
Yeah, it was, but it was easier than doing it when I wasn't. So, it was very challenging, because when I got sober, then I was really aware, you know, I wasn't always aware, when I wasn't sober. And, so it definitely, made me, you know, feel more pressure sometimes than maybe I had in the past, because I felt like if I didn't do things now, you know, at this, I'm not going to say perfectly, but, you know, up to my standards every time, right? That people were going to look at me as if, like, had something gone wrong, or, you know, they would look at me like I wasn't still sober, or, you know, I just felt a lot of pressure, you know, and it was all self-made pressure for sure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a learning experience for sure.
Was there a period in there where you felt comfortable coming out?
Oh yeah. You know, I came out, I think to all my friends by the time I was like 19, but I didn't come out to my mom until I was like 22 or 23. It was just kind of a gradual coming out for me, really. It wasn't really, you know, like Ellen or...
Sure. Did it feel like being in the ballet, did that feel more supportive than the school, or was it the same sort of machismo attitude?
No, it was very supportive. And honestly, I think that if I had the courage to speak up when I was younger, I think that I would have been able to find support as well. It just, for whatever reason, I was unable to see that. And I think that's just because of, you know, the way I was conditioned to think about being gay, and, you know, I just wasn't ready, you know.
What do you think made you ready a little bit later?
Just because I was gay and I had a boyfriend and, you know, wasn't.
Okay. That's a good reason.
Cause I was being gay.
Did you get a chance to be in a production of The Nutcracker?
Of course. I mean, I think I've performed in The Nutcracker more than I've performed in any other ballet. The first time I performed in it was when I was, I think, 11, I would say 11. Mm-hmm. And I literally did 3 different productions last year. I swore that I would never do it again. And I got asked to do a bunch of them last year and I did it again. And now I'm much older than 30 now too. So, you know, I've been doing it for a long time. Yeah. I definitely have done a lot of Nutcracker for sure.
How did it feel when you were young, when you were like 11 and doing it, to be in the show that it inspired you to pursue this as like a really serious commitment? Was that exciting?
Yeah, it was always exciting. When I was a kid, it was really fun because I got to do, you know, you get to do a different part every year. And, you know, when you're at a school that's not attached to a major ballet company, they choreograph the part for you. So you usually get to do something that's pretty challenging and fun. And yeah, it was always fun. I loved it.
You must have been in a lot of different roles in The Nutcracker. Like, how has that evolved over the years?
Well, I'll just say specifically what I did in the New York City Ballet. When I joined the company, I was a parent, a mouse, and core Spanish. And then I went on to be Mouse King, Mother Ginger, the lead parent, Dr. Stahlbaum. What else was I? Lead Spanish and Mother Ginger. I said Mother Ginger and Cavalier, which is I partnered the Sugar Plum. So
do you have a favorite?
Yeah, I love doing the Cavalier. It's And it's the what I still dance when I do it. And it's really fun. And looking back on it, I loved doing Dr. Stahlbaum. It was so fun. The lead of the party scene.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that when you watched that tape for the first time, like the bigness and the pageantry and all the performance and production was really exciting. Is it still exciting, or does it now feel like, well, this again?
It's a little bit of both. Now it's more fun to just watch the younger people. And especially if I do one where there are a lot of kids in the production, it's exciting to see kids perform, and the excitement that they feel for it is definitely something that I feed off of, because, you know, it's like, oh no, this, sometimes it is like, oh no, this again. So it's always fun to see the young people just get really excited about it and kind of feed off their energy.
So what prompted you to move on from the New York Ballet?
You know, I had auditioned for a Broadway show, Billy Elliot, and I ended up booking it. And at that moment in my career, I was 28 at that moment. And I remember thinking, is this it? Like, is this all I'm going to do? And I would see older dancers, and they would go on and dance until they were like about 40 with the company. And I really respect that. I just didn't want to just do that and then just be done. So I had the opportunity to audition for Billy Elliot, and I booked it. And so I decided to do it. And so that kind of took me away from the company for a year. And then I went back for like about 6 months or so. And then I ended up going back to Billy Elliot. So I just kind of, from that moment, decided to really try and just do Broadway and theater and some TV and film as well.
How was that different? How was doing Broadway different from just ballet?
It's very different, but it's just as grueling in a completely different way. The process of Billy Elliot was a process like I've never had on any other show. So the first experience was very special because it was my first experience, and it was such a detailed, slow, great rehearsal process. We had really amazing directors and choreographers and associates that worked on that show. Even like the dialect coaches were amazing. I mean, everybody that was involved was just cream of the crop. And we really worked on the material for, I think we had, did I say 12 weeks? Did I say that already? I think the rehearsal process for that show was 12 weeks. And any other show I've done since then has definitely not been 12 weeks long. So it was just really special. It's totally different because, A, obviously you're talking, you're singing, you're dancing at the same time. You're most of the time not wearing dance clothes. You're doing the same material day in and day out, whereas in a ballet company you're doing different material almost every hour. So, you know, there are a lot of differences, but, you know, there's a lot of similarities, and, you know, that you're performing live. You know, it's just as hard physically. Some people think that just because you're doing the same thing over and over and over on Broadway, that it's somehow easy. And as at least that's the kind of conversation I would get from people who only knew ballet. They'd be like, oh, well, you just go and do the same thing. I'm like, no, but like you have to do it 8 times a week, and it's very hard. It's very grueling. And it's like more of a mental game too, because you have to show up and just be present and let your body, you know, react to what's happening and do the show without your brain getting in the way.
When you made that jump from ballet to broader kind of showbiz venues, did you have any second thoughts about that?
All the time. Yes. Yes, I did. Yeah, you know, and mostly a lot of it would come from people just constantly asking questions like that while I was doing it. Like, do you miss the ballet? How is it? You know, and so I definitely second guessed myself a lot. You know, and I think it was just because I knew that I wanted to do other things. And in reality, I did. I got to do other things, and I kept dancing a lot of classical ballet as well. But yeah, it was, I doubted it all the time. Yeah, for sure. Like anything, you know, I doubt things all the time, but then you know what you want and you kind of just go after it.
Yeah. So what did you like at that time? Was there something in particular? Like, did you have a thing that you wanted, like a big goal that you were reaching toward?
I think the goal was, to work with people who inspired me and people that I kind of wanted to emulate, or I liked their work, or they could actually teach me something. A lot of the times in the ballet, I didn't feel that way. So I was kind of searching for that and, you know, doing different shows. It was like always, there's always new blood with you. You know what I mean? Whereas when you're in the ballet company, everyone's come up from the same place. So it always kind of felt like we all were very similar in the way we thought. Whereas when you work in different venues and different shows, people are all coming from way different walks of life, and everyone has something completely different and unique kind of to contribute with their voice. And so that's always exciting.
With the, you know, it sounds like regular second guessing of the decision that you were making. Were there also moments where you were like, no, this is it. This confirms I made the right decision.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, of course there are things that, you know, confirm it, you know, being happy confirms it. You know, booking new jobs confirms it. The fact that, you know, I'm 42 and I'm still performing even after the pandemic, which is kind of amazing. You know, but I think it's healthy to doubt yourself a little bit. I don't know that it's healthy to doubt as much as sometimes I do, but yeah, I mean, most of the jobs that I got confirmed it because I really enjoyed doing them and they were, you know, great things to be a part of.
Yeah. And somewhere in there you met your husband, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So tell me about how that happened.
We met in AA, actually. And he, at the time, was in Beauty and the Beast on Broadway. And I was a principal dancer with New York City Ballet. And we started becoming friends. And I ended up going to his Christmas party in 2006. And there was a lot of, you know, heavy flirting at the time. And I was in a terrible relationship still at the time. So like nothing really happened. And then eventually I was out of it. And then he was also in a relationship and then he was out of his relationship. And then we decided to kind of go out and the rest is kind of history after that. Right.
Was there, you know, both being in theater and live entertainment, it sounds like you might've had sort of a basis or a foundation for having a kind of talking the same language.
Yeah, you know, we had a basis of language through the performing arts and also through being sober together. It allowed us to connect on a great level because we obviously knew the backgrounds of, you know, what kind of jobs we had and what that required. And then we also had this really beautiful way of communicating and learning who each other were through just being open and honest because we were sober.
You know, something that it just occurred to me is that for a lot of folks, a way of dating and getting to know somebody is by going to shows, but you are both in shows. So I wonder if that kind of changes how you, you know, get to know the other person and their tastes.
Yeah. I mean, we would just hang out. I mean, I don't know if we ever went to see a Broadway show or theater together in the beginning. We must have, but I honestly can't think of it right now. But we would go see movies and, you know, obviously watch some TV and just hang out and go on dates to restaurants and things like that.
Were there pieces of culture that you both appreciated in a way that was like, oh, this is our thing?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that jumps out at me in the beginning is like we would just watch these really silly, you know, YouTube videos and the Saturday Night Live sketch for some reason about Gemini's twin. I don't know how old you are, but it was like, I guess it was probably like in 2007 or 2006. Mm-hmm. It was like this silly girl group that was like, you know, making fun of Destiny's Child because at the beginning of Destiny's Child they fired two members and then they became, you know, Beyonce, Michelle, and Kelly. So it was like Anna Gasteyer and Maya Rudolph, and they would every time, you know, every time they would do the sketch, the whoever was the host would be the new member of the group, and they were called Gemini's Twin. And there's a an episode with Gwyneth Paltrow, and you know what is it? It's like they're like, yeah, my name is Chanterelle, and they're like, yeah, we call her that because her real name is Bridget. And that's mad white, yo. Anyways, it's this really silly skit. And it's Gwyneth Paltrow. And they're, you know, it's just, it's silly. But I don't even know if that's a good answer. But it's like something that comes to my mind. In the beginning that we like thought was like the funniest thing. And we loved it.
Well, I think it's probably not a coincidence that the thing that you bonded over was like kind of a showbiz industry insider kind of joke.
Yeah. Totally.
So tell me about the performing that you did. Like, you've been doing Broadway and other kinds of performances. What's the latest, and what are the kind of gigs that you go out for now?
Well, right now my main gig is being the dada to our son Maverick. he'll be 4 months next week, which is amazing. So that's my main gig. And then also next week I'm going to be performing, at the Lake Tahoe Dance Festival, and I'll be dancing with Ashley Bowder, who is a current principal dancer at New York City Ballet and an old friend of mine. So that'll be really fun. And I'm auditioning, like, you know, I put something on tape today, and I also, am teaching ballet a lot, and yeah, that's what's happening.
And tell me about like the Broadway Husbands is sort of like, as a thing, like an institution that the two of you kind of created.
It is. It's amazing. We have a lot of fun doing it. You know, we do it to, you know, just shine light on LGBTQ plus couples and try and make, you know, gay couples a little bit more of a normal thing, gay marriage more of a normal thing, so that people see, two happy, healthy men, living their best lives and just, you know, making it a positive thing. And now that we have our son Maverick, and it's awesome. And you know, Broadway Husbands in the beginning was, we did it when we first moved to Charleston temporarily. We were there for 9 months, and we did it just to kind of like, you know, just to, you know, hopefully help a young gay person in the South who maybe didn't have the support that maybe others do or, you know, so we were just doing it for, you know, anyone out there that, you know, needs someone to look up to. And because we didn't have people like us growing up on Instagram. We didn't have Instagram. I didn't know that I could be married until, you know, I actually got married. You know, a couple years before that, I had some friends who were gay and were married, and I was like, oh, I guess we can do this, you know? So I think it's really important for representation, so that kids know that everything is possible for them, no matter who they are. Because growing up, I don't think either one of us knew that. So
Maverick is still maybe a little young to appreciate a lot of the kind of work that you do, but is there stuff that you're looking forward to showing him?
I mean, I would love for him to like still, if I'm still dancing when he's maybe like old enough to actually know what's going on, maybe to see me dance and see like what his reaction would be. But yeah, I mean, just that, you know. And he already sees me dance. I dance around for him all the time in the living room. I put him in the boppy, and he is the best audience member ever.
Yeah, I guess it must be a different kind of crowd to play to when it's your son.
Yeah. He's very easy to please. He has a lot of fun.
So if folks want to check out your performances or Broadway Husbands, where should they go?
They should go check us out at Broadway Husbands on Instagram, or you can go to my page, Stephen R. Hanna, on Instagram, and you'll see everything that's going on.
Fantastic. Well, Stephen, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks to Stephen for joining me, and thanks to you for listening. And thanks to everybody who makes the Sewers of Paris possible on Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/MattBaum to support the show and get backer rewards like stickers in the mail and patron-only bonus videos. Check out my YouTube channel for stories about pop culture. That's at youtube.com/MattBaum. And subscribe to my weekly newsletter for fun stories about queer pop culture at mattbaum.com. The theme song for The Sewers of Paris is Parisian from filmmusic.io by Kevin MacLeod of Comptech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0. And until next time, croissant.